coffee's all over the lid.
Yeah, I know.
I never worked at a fast food place, so I don't know the demands. But, like, why is the coffee all over the lid?
That's because I had it in a tray today.
Oh, it was you.
It was bouncing around. That was me.
Because sometimes they overfill it.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, way too full.
10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag.
Do you remember the old lids
at
Tim Hortons? The worst.
Were they?
The flat ones.
Were they? Why?
Horrible.
Well, because when you took a sip, it would be
because
like if they put too much.
It's flat.
Yeah.
So it's like it was almost flush with the top of the cup.
Yeah, yeah.
So it always would come out. Then they smartened up and copied McDonald's.
Yeah. True that.
So true that. So today is another episode of our 6-episode series. It's episode 5. It's been 5 weeks of this.
Yeah.
Time flies.
Getting sick of it.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
You know?
It's been 5 weeks. We've got one more after this, right?
One more. Number 5 and number 6. Everyone seems to be enjoying the parenting discourse, which is funny because I'm 28 and have no kids.
True that.
But you know what? I had a comment criticism.
Oh, good. I want to hear it.
And I've had it before. It's not the first time, but I see people.
You don't know because you don't have kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the criticism. So what's funny, my rebuttal to that is, okay, I've been, not that I necessarily matters, but I've been training kids for 12 years. I just finished playing, but I just went through it myself. So it's more coming from the player perspective anyways, as opposed to the parent perspective. So it's like, would it be better to listen to some guy that gives you advice just because he has a kid? Like, does that mean that their opinion is better because they have a kid and I don't? I'm not saying it would obviously help me in my advice giving if I had one, but you know what I mean?
It might help, but I understand what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Because you can make the same argument that those same people say about you don't have to play to be a coach.
Right.
So I think when you spend enough time with kids and you have common sense in life and you've done a process and you're analytical and you have people skills, that the similarities between coaching and parenting are very similar.
I would say even broadening it out, it's like between parenting and teaching, which if I've been a teacher for 12 years, then it's like that's longer than a lot of people listening have been parents.
Yeah.
So it's like
the split, but where I would say not having a kid, it's kind of like, okay, coaching, you never played, so how can you coach?
Right.
There's an argument you could say you
exactly.
don't have to, but there's certain things about being a player, if you're coaching, that will help you put yourself in that mindset or in that position. And so it would be the same thing as, to a certain degree, if you have all the common sense and you're a good teacher and stuff like that, there's times, especially when it becomes the emotional part of having
kids. That's exactly my own self-critique, right?
Yeah, because it's very easy when you're removed, which when you're making decisions, it's good if you can take emotions out of it, right? Because you can make clear decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But, and just like making decisions in anything in life, if you put your emotions into it, then your decisions reflect your emotions.
Right.
Whereas if you're coaching, when you have a kid, you might make decisions on basically having your own kid or your own experiences with your own kid. And so you can have a little bit of bias.
Yeah. I feel like when I'm speaking about such issues, I normally, or at least I try not to, I'm sure I have made this mistake a few times, but I try to not speak from the parent perspective on purpose because I know that about myself. Like, I don't know what it's like to have that protective feel, or how you've mentioned before, how you never want to see your kid get hurt, or it's like, I can sympathize with that, but I don't know what that feels like. I have no idea the level of connection that you can feel with an offspring.
Yeah. Yeah, no, dude, it's a different feeling, and that's what makes going through sports. You know, a lot of the times you see, it's so funny. You see people make a decision and they know that, let's say it's, you know, we're talking about skill development today. It's like, I know that my kid doesn't need to do X, but these other buddies of his are doing it and I feel bad for my kid, or I want to give him more, so therefore I do the thing. And that's an emotional decision, not a reasonable one necessarily. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that was with Charlie when he went through you know, he asked me a couple of times to do spring hockey. And for me personally, and people can do whatever they want, but for me personally, I didn't see any benefit to it. I didn't see, I saw the cost. I didn't see how it was going to make him a better player. And it was like, no. So I was able to, even though there was a few times I was like, I want to give him the opportunity just to go be a kid, not even be a kid, but I want to give him the opportunity like everyone else. But it's like, no, this is the line in the sand. I took the emotions out of it. So it's not good for you. You want to be serious about hockey. In my mind, this ain't it. So you can play hockey from October to March or April. And the better you play, the longer you play. So anyways, yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Do you got any other bullshit you want to say before I go into my yap? You're good? Seems like you're good. Are you making something up on the spot right now?
No, I have had a lot of things going through my head, but I guess nothing.
Nothing you want to share with the group?
Nothing to share.
Nothing to share with the group, eh?
No.
Okay, cool. I was looking at other podcasts yesterday because I'm a big podcast guy, none of which have anything to do with hockey. Funny enough, I don't listen to any sports related podcasts. I don't think, unless it's, I guess if you count like trainers, like learning about training stuff, that counts. But outside of that, it's like all different random topics. Anyhow, I'm looking at the reviews for some of these podcasts. And this one particular one I was looking at has like 26,000 5-star reviews.
That's incredible.
And because I know...
Is that good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because,
I thought so.
Because I know what that means on the back end.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, that is life change. Like, that is an insane. Like, that level of commitment from a person to say, I'm going to leave a review. Because I'm a guy that I don't leave reviews. Like, I don't care, right? It doesn't matter how much I like the thing that you're doing. I'm not a guy that would typically leave a review. You have to really compel me. Like, I really got to think what you're doing is valuable to do that. So anyways, I'm looking at this. I'm like, you got 26,000 people to take time out of their day.
Yeah, not just listen.
Yeah. And it's like, it takes literally 2 seconds to hit 5-star. And then if you want to write something, it takes longer. But it's like, wow, that's crazy.
It's impressive.
I know. So anyways, my point of that, if you guys like the podcast, I'm not even trying to like do this. It's actually super, super helpful when you guys do that. Because I was looking through where the podcast is and you can't really see ours. Like you have to find it, right? Yeah. It's not like put up anywhere, but when you review it and whatever, it shows up for other people to find. So, that's something that's helpful. With that, then the store, I haven't mentioned the store recently. So if you guys want to wear some shirts, like the one I'm wearing, or the hat, like the one I'm wearing, but it's backwards. The store, we have like shirts and hats and all that kind of thing. So if you guys want to head over there to get some stuff, you can do that. And then memberships obviously are still there, which is the best way to support the podcast. I wanted to mention also the AAA camps that I made a post about it on our other account yesterday, and I'm going to share it on the podcast account that most of you guys follow. A lot of people have been reaching out from out of town since I made, and that post was cool. Do you like that post?
Yeah, it was nice.
It was cool.
Yeah.
I was doing it, actually, it's funny, I was making that that image, like, because I had to do a whole bunch of cut and paste and use like effects and this editing software that I have. So I'm doing it and Charlie's like, man, it's actually kind of cool that you know how to do this stuff, right? He's like watching me evolve it like in real time.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I had a lot of people reach out about that. So if you're a AAA player, because it's for AAA kids, and you live somewhere reasonable where you can get here or not, I mean, if some people want to fly here, that's fine. But if it's something reasonable, you guys want to reach out through just that contact page that we have on the website. And a bunch of people have been reaching out about that.
So can you just be clear on the contact page? Because I've had quite a few people reach out to me personally that from the podcast.
Okay.
And because I'm not a techie guy.
Yeah.
Hey, what date is it? I'm like, it's in the summertime and it's...
Right.
So if you could just be specific about the contact, because it's going to be very, very good.
Yeah. So, okay. When you guys send me DMs or when you send us DMs, I'm just the one that checks them. When you send us DMs, we're literally drowning in DMs. Like I can't get to all the DMs. So if you guys send us a message on Instagram, one, I might not get to it. And two, it's hard for me to send links over Instagram. And then it's hard for me to keep our correspondence organized through Instagram message. So like if you have a quick question to send a DM, that's one thing. But if you guys need like actual information, go on the website, which is powertechhockey.ca. And then there's a button that is the contact tab at the top, or you can do powertechhockey.ca/contact. And then that page that you fill out, it's just like a little form page where you write your name and email and what you want to talk about. I get all those. I look at all of those. So it's easier for me to send you links that we have for registration and information. It's way easier for me to do it through that medium. So if you're interested in doing that, don't send me a DM. And if you do, and I get to it, I'm just going to tell you to go to the website and send me an email, because I can't keep track of all the DMs. So if you want the actual information about costs and location and what the itinerary is and what we're doing, it's going to be an awesome camp. And it's going to be even more awesome now that I didn't even really think of this, but all the kids that would potentially come from out of town. But even since I posted that, we've had a bunch of kids already from out of town that have said, hey, I want
to
come.
Yeah, I've always made this on purpose, hard to find our links and stuff. Yeah. It's always been invitational. And the reason, just so people know that, like, it's always hidden. So if you're interested in one of the AAA camps in the summertime, Eric can send you out the link. And the reason that we hide is because we for a couple of reasons, if it says AAA and it's a high-end camp, I want it that way. I don't want someone sneaking in that is a player, or, you know, just not the camp that he belongs in,
mm-hmm.
because it's going to be over your head, most likely.
Yeah.
So that's why we try to keep it true to the, not try, we keep it true to what it's the level it's supposed to be.
Right. Yeah. So that's probably the big thing that we got going on now. And then the last thing that I'm going to mention is Blue Star again, over my shoulder. They have a deal starting today and it goes till Sunday, which I think is the end of the month. So Sunday, which this comes out Sunday, so I'm going to be posting it until then. But on Sunday, which is today for you guys listening, today's the last day you can get up to 67% for some of the products. So we have a link in the description or in the bio. So if you go there, it'll be the last day that you guys can get discounts on the supplements. So use that link if you're interested in doing that. And now on to other things. Today, we're going to be talking about youth training and skill development. We've talked about it sporadically in the past, and I think we had one dedicated episode where we kind of talked about it, but we're going to revisit it again today in the context of the parenting series that we've been doing, and kind of putting the parent side of it as the focus, as opposed to the player side, focusing on their own development. So I kind of want the underlying theme of today, I want it to kind of be like what you need versus what you don't necessarily need to be doing in terms of the skills and the training and all that extra stuff. So this is going to be outside of your practices and games and any normal things you'd be doing with your team. This is the extras. So all the extra skill training, extra off-ice training. So I kind of want that to be the underlying theme of today, is what do you need to be doing, and then what is an option or you don't have to, because this is where the pressure starts to come in as parents again, right? You feel like you have to. The common saying we've been hitting a lot lately is the keep up with the Joneses. That's where that starts to come in. So maybe we can start, before we got to get into the meat, is if I could get, unless you have any other opening thoughts, obviously you can throw them on there, but what kind of is, talk about your philosophy for skill development kind of as kids progress, I'd say, from young to older. You can go as in depth as you want, but it doesn't have to be that crazy.
So first of all, I don't have a philosophy in general, or I do. No, but what I mean by that is
so clear.
Well, I know. But what I mean by that is I don't have a philosophy, because there doesn't need to be a philosophy. That's the philosophy. Like when you're young, right? Because a youth player doesn't need anything outside of just playing the game, right? And then the other side of it is, who's driving the bus when it comes to the skill development, and what's appropriate, obviously. And then, but I think a big question is what the hell is skill anyways? It's a huge question, because if you ask, or what you would say is a good skill session, is a lot of people would say, okay, so what, like, you know, if what's a good skill session? Okay, so we got to work on skating, we got to work on stick handling, we got to work on shooting, we got to work on passing. Okay, but inside each one of those things, there's a whole world of, you know, what is skating? Is it agility? Is it turning? Is it quick starts? Is it lateral movement? Is it backwards? Is it, you know, keep going, right? Edges, you know, all that stuff. So anyways, that's a big thing. So when I look at skill development, okay, so let's just say that is skill development. Okay. When I look at skill development, yes, that is part of the skill development process. You should know how to skate very well. you should know how to stick handle shoot and all that kind of stuff. True. But what to me, what skill development is what you do every day on the ice. So it's going to be definitely different for other people, but this is why being young, it's not that important. It shouldn't be necessarily that specific because you actually don't know what you are, right? So if you say, I'm a defenseman, well, if we've done all these drills and then you're 15 years old and you're still working on stick handling drills, you're still working on rushing the puck and shooting and all that stuff, that's good. But what do you do every single game? It probably won't be what resembles your skill drills, skill sessions. So what does a defenseman do every day? Well, I can guarantee you a skill that he has to do is, retrieve a puck out of his own end. That's a skill. Keeping a puck in the offensive zone on a hard rim and getting to open ice, that's a skill. But let's just use the one going to your own end. How many people would be excited about going to a clinic where we're throwing pucks and retrieving for 40 minutes? Not a lot of people, but as a defenseman, do you not think that's a good skill to work on? 100%. And then the skill to that is, why are you doing it? Or why do you make mistakes? And how do I fix them? Or why are you doing it? And how do you do it better? So that's what skill is to me. It's making a tape-to-tape pass is a skill. A winger that is on the wall getting a hard rim or a soft rim with a D pinching down, that's a skill. There's a lot to unpack to do that skill. But it's not the same as what the average person will look at as skill development, right? So just to back that up again, so it's important at a young age. So I guess it's this way. When you're at the younger ages, I think it's important, number one, to have your kid just play. He dictates it. And I'll take this to my grave. If a kid is playing hockey and loves hockey, he's going to pick up his stick and shoot pucks. He's going to put on his rollerblades. And people say, well, rollerblades isn't the same as skating. Okay, whatever. Yeah, no, people get that technical.
I know, man. Yeah.
You know, they think it matters that you're not pushing off on an edge and you don't turn the same. It's like you're seven. It's okay. It's okay. It's 100% okay. But that's the indicator that that is skill development. You're just building basic skills, right? And you're in your head, you're playing a game in your head, and you're pretending you're Sidney Crosby or whatever. That to me, that is what skill development is when you're young. And then as you get, so what would be an ideal thing if you're going skating, shooting, passing, and all that kind of stuff? Like ideal skill to me is just playing, especially small area games. And I know a lot of people wouldn't think that's that beneficial, but it actually is. To perfect a stride at 7 or 9, that could come. Yeah. So that's that. Now, as you get older, skill development now becomes taking a skill, applying it to a game. That's very, very important because there's so many times where, I'm throwing a lot at you here, but there's so many times where we focus on how fast you play, how good of a skater, how many dangles and a good shot and all that stuff. And then you become older. And it's not about, like, everyone has a good shot. Not everybody, but a good shot's a good shot. But how many guys with a really good shot don't get goals? Well, that's because the skill of getting open or the skill of creating space or how to shoot a puck, why there's a reason your shots aren't getting through. That's a skill to unpack. And everybody's a little bit different. So the generic skills that most people do are somewhat fine when you're young and somewhat fine when you're older. But at some point when you discover that you have you're at a certain level, I guess, and have a desire to move to another level where it becomes very important to take skill and apply it to a game.
Yeah.
Make sense?
Yeah, man. Oh, I'm actually fired up right now.
Okay. I thought you were looking at me with the eyes of a chicken saying,
no,
that's a lot.
It's a lot, okay. But like there's so many ways I could go that, as you say, I'm a mosquito in a
I shut it off just because I thought you were...
Good because we can tighten it up and then keep going. Because I don't even know where to start right now because it's just so many good things we could talk about. So I kind of want to bring it in the direction of the more isn't always better and then like quality versus quantity discussion. So first, just like putting a bow on what you were saying is when kids are young, everybody can understand and conceptualize raw skill. Like everybody understands those things, right? Stick handle, shoot, skate, pass, like easy, right? where things start to get fuzzy for particularly parents or people who haven't played, and even sometimes people who have played, they don't even know that this is what they were learning when they learned it. Like that, you gave that example before of Steve Ott, where he was talking about which foot he shoots off of and he didn't know, right? He said like, oh, I shoot off this foot. And you're like, I guarantee you shoot off that foot, or however the
example. Yeah, it was someone else, but that's okay. Steve was something else. We were working on a shot that he was saying, I don't shoot like that. And I said, okay.
Yeah, whatever. Right. Yeah. Whatever.
But there's another.
My point being like sometimes even the guys that play, they don't even know why they're doing or how they're doing it. Just do it, right? So where things get fuzzy, as I was saying, is when the transition happens from you now have a baseline of raw skill, and now we need to turn our focus to the skills of how to apply it in the game. And we talk about this all the time, right? So there's a transition that happens as you start to get 13, 14, 15, 16, where situational play and understanding how to apply those raw skills to particular situations on the ice, that is what the focus should now be on. And people don't know that. They think like, I need to work on my skills, and my skills to them is still stick handling, shooting, skating, passing. It's like, no, we're beyond that. We have to be beyond that now. That doesn't mean you don't ever work on your stick handling, shooting in isolation, because it's like for school is like the analogy I always use. It's like you're in grade school, you're getting a generic education about a bunch of different things. And then as you get older, you start to apply that general knowledge to a specific field. And then you start to specialize into a specific field through university and beyond that, right? Yeah. It's the exact same thing. So when you're young, you're getting the raw skill. And once we hit a baseline where maybe you're not the best at any of them, but you have enough to work with, then we start to get into situational skill development, all the while you're still working on those raw skills, where it starts to become easier as you're older to work on those raw skills on your own. And maybe it's important to get a good skills coach that can teach you that situational stuff as you start to get older, because maybe you don't know, or you haven't recognized, you don't recognize the opportunities to use those raw skills that you've been developing for the last 10 years or whatever. So that's kind of the gist of what you kind of laid out there to start.
Yeah. Well, so you were just talking about that one shot.
Mm-hmm.
So it was funny because 2 weeks ago I've started with my junior guys, like OHL guys and college guys on the ice. And I think the first day we had 8 or 9 guys, and like I like to keep it small, so that's what we're doing. I was very, very clear on what we were doing. And it's funny. It's funny. Maybe parents can unpack this a little bit too. It's funny to see the mindset of a player. So I unpacked it, or we went on the ice. I said, okay, here's what we're doing today. You guys are just basically 3 weeks, two to four weeks out of playing, and you've had a long, hard year. Your bodies are beat up. When I know we want to get back on the ice. So it's not a good time to be going hard. So, but we're going to do productive stuff. So of course, some skating that was more mechanical, a couple quick bursts of speed just to keep that going. And then the next thing was like really, really, like taking really, really, really hard passes, like extraordinarily hard, and taking those passes and putting them into a shot. But the shot had to be one that I chose, and I chose one that I know for a fact, well, I just know that if they were going to shoot a puck, they wouldn't shoot it this way, because it would be their, if they're in a jam shot, like, okay, this is how I have to do it. So I made them get uncomfortable and shoot this shot probably did about 300 to 400 shots each with hard passes. So there's a lot of skills there. So a couple of them were like, hey, coach, can I just shoot off this foot because of this? And I said, you didn't hear, man. You're doing this because I know that you're going to do the other shot that you do every single time. We'll get to that. I want you to get uncomfortable and start a pattern for this one. And I gave a reason, because if you cut to the middle, this is a shot you're going to be using. If you get a pass from the outside, this is the shot that you need to be using. Couple examples, and so my point to that is there was a couple that really resisted any type of change. So like from a parent's point of view, it's like, it's okay to challenge a coach and ask why, but a few of them just didn't want to have anything other than what was in their skill set, because they're already good at it. Do you know what I mean? So that's just, it's an interesting thing, but that's what we're working on, something that's different at yeah. that level, because if you only have one shot, it's like having one bullet in your gun.
Yes.
Right.
And so this is a great, that's a great example. As I was saying before, as they're getting older, it's that situational awareness now. It's the situational skill that those players don't have yet, right? Which it's like, okay, not only do you not have it, but now you don't have the mindset to understand that you need to have it. Because if you have a good shot, that's fine. But in a game, when you need to take this shot and you try to take this other shot, you're going to default to that other shot, and now you're not getting the shot.
Yeah, train your body to exactly. be there before, right?
Right. So it's that's a good example of that. So I want to talk about the, it's going to be a little more of like a nuanced talk about the quality versus quantity thing, because it's kind of I would say it's a common, what's the word? It's like a cliche, like quality over quantity. Like
you need ice.
So it actually goes both ways, right? Everyone says I need ice. And then on the other side, people think, well, it's got to be quality, but it's actually both depending on where you're at, right? So the younger you are, the more the quantity makes sense, because you have no base yet. You don't even know how to move your legs. So do you need to have a high quality technical skating skill session when you're 7 or 8? No, because your body, you have nothing to work with yet. You need the quantity first. Right. As you start to get older now, you've done the quantity part. You basically know how to skate. Now it's about quality. Now it's about addressing specific things that you need, whether it's a shot or a skating thing or whatever it is. But people, again, forget, they don't recognize that they need to get out of the quantity mindset and start to switch over to the quality as they get older and they're more selective with their time and their energy. I just had a conversation with two of our guys last night. We're talking about their development program through the summer. And I was saying to these two, because they're two very good players, and I was saying to them, this summer, everyone's going to want a piece of you. Everybody's going to offer you this skate and that skate and this workout and come do this and come do this. And you guys have to be smart enough to identify what's good for you and what's not good for you. You know, what do you need and what don't you need? Because if you just keep expending energy on stuff without any purpose behind it or any intention behind it, you're just wasting your own resources. Where you need to have focused attention on specific things now, where you guys are at in your development journey, you know? So maybe talk a little bit about that, the quality quantity thing, and then maybe how it changes as kids start to get older too.
Yeah. So quantity, like here's the thing on quantity. Young kids, I mean, it's hard to burn a young kid out, providing they're the ones choosing to do it. Like, it's when, you know, I've never been a fan of telling my son that he should go and shoot pucks. Like, it's just a waste of time. So, but when he would do it, or kids that I know would just go out there and shoot it, shoot pucks or do something, rollerblade, or just do that thing because they love hockey. I don't think there's a thing called burnout. Like, for example, in the COVID year, well, I shouldn't just say the COVID year, but that was especially true. The group of kids that my son hung out with, some of them, well, there was a pond that my son used to go to that was a secret pond. It was huge. It was the size of a rink, basically. It was awesome. So we'd bring friends and would go out to this thing, and they would just play all day, morning till night, some of them. Some of them were like, no, I don't want to play that long. And my kid would be like, I don't understand. It's hockey. You could play all day. That's a kid that wants to be a hockey player. And I'm not saying if you stop at 4 hours, you don't want to. Right. You know, he's a little crazy anyways. But in previous to that, you would see the kids that had access to the outdoor rinks here in Canada. Okay, so if you're in Florida, you don't have this. But you might have roller hockey rinks. But anyways, the outdoor rink, the kids down the road that had them, it would be like any spare minute, that's where he was going, man. That's where he was going. So that, to me, is the biggest indicator of good quantity, because everything, like, there was free ice, I get to go, I'm going. Someone wanted to play shoot pucks or something, like, yeah, I'm going. That's what I'm doing. And he gravitated to those types of guys. So that is good quantity, because you're doing it on your own, you're getting creative. And there's a big difference between me taking you on the ice and saying, okay, do this, do this, do this. Like it can be really fun, but it's also could be, okay, shut up. Let me just be, right? Not everything has to be a lesson. So the quantity is really, really good, providing the kid is just doing his thing and having a blast. Because you can't hurt your skill progression by going out on an outdoor rink or grabbing ice with a couple buddies and just having fun, right? You're going to do all the things that you need to do. As you get older, the quality becomes a little bit more important if you're paying for it, right? Well, no, I shouldn't even say that. The quality should be more, quality of the, if you're getting an instructor, it gets more important the older that you get. And then how do you, so, and what I would like to say about that is that quality ice, like if you're doing it with the mindset of skill development, not just going out and playing and having fun for skill development, the quality of that would be, can I take this and apply it to a game or a situation? If you're not getting that, then I don't understand what it is except for reps at something. Because what happens is it's very impressive to watch someone go through a skill drill, tight turns and coming out of a corner, slipping it under the pep or going around a cone and doing all these fancy things. And it's good to see and it's not going to hurt you. But if that's all you do, then you can, it's not applicable in a game except for like if you can turn it on in a certain situation. So that's why you'll see a lot of kids in practice and in skill sessions where you go, that kid must be good because he flies, he can shoot a puck hard. But yet that kid many, many times can't process how do I apply that into a game? How do I get to open ice? How do I get the puck? How do I get the shot off to show my skills off?
Right.
Right. So that's where it becomes very important.
So I got two things on that. So on the quantity part of it, I'll start with the quality thing because I have a question about the quantity one for you. But the quality thing, an example for that is that came to mind while you were talking was when I have guys in the gym and I teach them a certain movement pattern and they can do it with a weight or they can do it with a barbell or they can do it with whatever. But then I put them in an athletic situation and they don't apply the squat or the deadlift or the hinge or whatever the movement is. So as an example, yesterday we were doing, or 2 days ago, we were doing a squat and then we're going from a squat to a vertical jump. So they do their squat and all of them know how to, the correct form to do a back squat. But then they go to do their vertical jump and it's like their low back is, yeah, they're collapsing. They're not staying upright. Their chest is low. Their head's all over the place. Their arms aren't working. So I stop the workout and I say, guys, like, don't forget the reason we learned this. Yeah, we're doing this to get bigger and stronger and whatever. But if you don't recreate that movement pattern, then the strength you're gaining will not apply in this situation, you know? So I always remind guys in the off-ice setting, and it's the same as on the ice or in anything really, if the thing you're practicing you cannot bring to the situation you need it in, then it's not a useful thing to have. So, you know, you take you're really good at stick handling and it's like, okay, if you're in open ice and you slow down to your heels and start chicky-chicky through the neutral zone, it's like, that's not where you use that. So now it's fine that you have that skill, but it's not useful for you, right? Or you're in the corners when you're in really tight area in traffic and you don't know how to get that chicky-chicky going to get through those small areas, then it's like you're not applying the skill that you have, you know? So it's important that you identify that. And the off-ice, it's a lot easier to see in the off-ice situation because it's not as complex of a situation. So it's like squat jump or squat to a squat jump. That should be very simple to understand. It's like you do your squat here and then you're doing a squat with a jump, but well, it breaks down.
Especially, you know, like, especially when you think about the situation that the kids are in at that point, they're not in an environment where, I just got to jump. They're in an environment where it's like, I've done a squat with form. I'm thinking about my form or somewhat should be going to a jump, which is an identical movement. To not apply what you just learned to your next movement doesn't even make sense. It means kind of checked out a little bit. So not saying it's an irrelevant rep, but it's kind
of. Well, yeah, and that's where the other element of quality comes in. Yeah. It's like you want your session to be quality. But like, for example, the workout that I run, it's a good workout. I know that it's appropriate for hockey players. That is what it's made for. But if they don't execute the workout correctly, then the quality of that workout is now poor. It's not good, even though on paper it looks good. you know, and that's where it's good to have a good trainer. You want to make sure someone's actually correcting you, because you could have the Einstein of workouts, but if they don't tell you what you're supposed to be doing and how you're supposed to apply it to a situation that will be useful to you in your sport or in your performance, then now it's not useful anymore, you know? So that's on the quality side. Going back to the quantity thing we were talking about, one of the things you said is when you go on the ice, no matter what you do, it's not going to hurt your skills progression. If you're going on the ice playing, like, it's not going to hurt you to go on the ice and play, you know? And so maybe like another little nuanced conversation is when people talk about practicing bad habits, because that's a concern that people will always bring up, especially when we're talking young. A lot of people think, well, it's good to get like some instruction, which I agree, it's good to get some instruction, but because you don't want kids practicing bad habits. And it's like, where's kind of the line on the bad habits thing? Because for me, I don't see, if you're going out playing the game, I don't see that you're going to be getting any worse at what you're doing, especially when the younger you are. If anything, I feel like you're going to start to figure out better movement patterns by accident, just from playing more. But a common thing people will say is what about, you know, you might practice having bad habits or bad skating, get into bad skating patterns or whatever. So what kind of
thoughts
on that?
Yeah, I don't think in young you're going to develop bad skating patterns when you're young, and that's not, you fix that stuff later. But like, you could argue like, oh, bad habits if you play too much of the cross ice or pond hockey and stuff, you can create bad habits like from positionally, or you're hanging on to a puck too much, or you're not passing, or you're not back checking hard. And you could say, okay, those are bad habits, which they would kind of are, but that's in an unstructured environment. When you get to the structured environment and a coach is giving you back check hard, move the puck, and there's a system somewhat in place, then those habits can be pulled in, right? But as far as like developing a terrible stride from being on the ice too much, well, that, not really, not when you're young. It's just better because you're turning and doing all these things, right? I'd rather be out there having fun and doing 128 tight turns because I'm playing and having fun. That's, you're doing them
right.
You kind of figure things out.
Yeah, and I think
you fix that. You can fix that stuff.
Well, that's kind of my other question is, because some other people will be of the mindset that it's almost like they think that you can learn mechanics perfect off the hop. So it's like, well, if he gets instruction right off the bat, then he'll never get into a bad habit. And it's like, no, because I
would say just try it.
Yeah, yeah.
You right? do that for 2-3 years. Just do that.
Right. Because it's too detailed.
Yeah, no,
right?
Do that. Like if you're like, that's what I would say. I'm being an ass here a bit, but I'm not. I'll give you a choice. Let your kid go out and play pond hockey or rent the ice with a bunch of buddies from 7 to 10 years old or 7 to 11 years old. That's their skill development. Just go piss around as much as they want. Or that you get that one, or you get private lesson every day or 4 days a week, 3 days a week. And it's strictly the mechanics piece. Like if someone just telling you what to do, and pick one. And then I know which one I'm taking.
Well, and the other part too is something I've noticed with a lot of skills coaches. And if I'm being totally honest, there's very few skills coaches that I've seen, particularly with skating, that can really explain mechanics well. So, for example, if I'm trying to teach a kid how to skate properly, like the first thing people say always, this is what I use with kids on the treadmill when I'm trying to teach them, the first movement that everyone will say is bend your knees, right? But if you bend your knees first, you're not in a good skating posture, because the first movement is actually a hip hinge. You do a hip hinge and then you bend your knees. But a lot of instructors don't know that. So if you're on the ice when you're 7, 8, 9, 10, even if instruction would be better, a lot of instructors don't even know how to explain the body mechanics properly, let alone you being able to execute the body mechanics properly as a kid. Like if I say to an 8-year-old, hey, hinge your hips or stick your butt out, they don't know the movement. They don't get it. So it's like for the first 2 years of their skating, they have wood legs. They don't know how to bend properly. They don't know how to sit into the saddle properly. They don't know.
Well, but there's the key, which you've done right there, is you've described the biggest element when it comes to skill development or coaching. It's what is the problem. That's what it is. So if you look at someone that is that stiff leg or leaning forward too much, like their chest is over their toes and they got the wide legs or whatever it is, it's like, okay, bending your knees is not the first cue that you would get. It would be to identify to the kid and they're saying, okay, here, son, look for a second. You know, maybe it's standing still. You know, push on his head, he's going to fall. It's like, okay, why is that happening? Because you're unbalanced. So what you have to do, number one, to get any power, to get any agility, to get anything, is you've got to put yourself in an athletic position where you're balanced. Because if you have balance, you can have power in everything that you do, right? A boxer doesn't stand in an awkward position. You never get any power out of his punch, right? So it's the same thing as hockey. It's that first thing you have to identify. So once you identify, okay, here's where you're going to get your this is your athletic position or this is your hockey stance, and now you're in good position. Right now you can kind of explain like the first place where you need to go to get that is, okay, so let's say you take that skater, you're leaning forward, your legs are straight or whatever. It's like, okay, let's straighten you out and let's bend first at the waist, at the hips, and then everything kind of folds together. But if you try to do knees first, then your your hips come forward and it doesn't make sense. So anyways, the key is identifying what problems are before you can start teaching anything. And not everybody's the same,
mm-hmm.
right?
And that's the magic of being a good teacher, being a good skills coach. And a lot of them, ones that I see frequently, they cannot address the actual issue that a kid is having. So if you're working on an inside edge drill and the coach just keeps saying, get lower, it's like, you're not explaining to me how to get lower or why I'm not getting low enough.
Well, how would some kids get lower? They would get their
chest forward.
That's right.
Right? So that's
their head, whatever. That's lower.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and then the coach would be like, no, like keep your chest up, but you need to get lower.
Yeah.
And then the kid's like, okay, how? I don't know how to do that. So if the trainer can't explain that to you, then you're not going to be getting better anyways. So back to my original point, even if the instruction was better at a younger age, a lot of instructors can't even teach the teaching points because they don't know body mechanics. Because a lot of skills coaches are someone that maybe used to play or whatever, but they're not versed in biomechanics or how any of your body moves, you know? So it's like you're going to them for skating mechanics, but they don't know body mechanics. So how can they appropriately teach skating mechanics outside of just doing drills that they find or that they see? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I would go back that. I would challenge people. And I'm like, I know most people are not going to take this challenge, but I would ask yourself, like, privately by yourself, but ask yourself, like, ask this question. If I got to make a decision here, I've got to let my kid go and go have fun, go find ice, go shoot pucks, do everything kind of without an instructor. If I'm going to make one choice or the other one is everything with an instructor, which one would you choose? And that's kind of I would lean towards one. Like, so I'm not saying tell your kid just to only have fun till he's 12, never have an instructor or coach. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is when you're looking at the development side is if you were choosing one, like you're only allowed to pick one, I would say go get a thousand million reps having fun with your buddies rather than every single time going out with a coach that's telling you how to do everything and instructionally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to call this a rapid fire round, even though if you elaborate, it won't be that quick. So it doesn't really matter, but you can answer these in as much detail as you like.
Okay.
I think that's fun.
Okay.
So we're going to say I want you to tell me whether this thing, which I already know all the answers, but it's fine.
Okay.
Whether this is necessary, something that's necessary versus something that's a luxury.
Yeah.
If you want to elaborate on the things I have as topics.
Well,
then you can.
What I'm going to do is I know the answer is either yes or no, but I would like to give a certain perspective so that someone doesn't feel bad about themselves.
Perfect.
Or feel too good about themselves.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Got to keep everyone honest.
And the other thing is because me or most of my friends would agree with what I'm saying, doesn't make it right for every single person as well.
Correct. Okay? Correct. I agree. Okay. So what's necessary versus a luxury?
And there's perspective on everything.
Of course.
I just needed to say that.
Okay. So first one is our favorite.
Yeah.
Before you answer.
Yeah.
spring hockey.
Yeah.
So before you answer, I had somebody send, I think, I don't know, remember if it was a message I saw or an email. I haven't answered it yet if you sent me this, but I'm going to. In the message, they said that we're against spring hockey. Mm-hmm. It was like, I know you guys are against spring hockey, but WXYZ. Like, okay, we're not against spring hockey. That's not what we're saying.
No, we're just against it.
Yeah, we just don't like it and we don't want you to do it ever. No, it's the situation is what we talk about. So we try to choose our words very carefully. So pay attention to the words that we're using.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So necessary versus luxury spring hockey.
Okay.
Go.
Necessary or luxury?
Is it necessary or is it a luxury?
Total luxury.
Okay.
But
pourquoi?
Why? That was French for but pourquoi.
Yeah, why?
Or is it Spanish?
I think it's why, pourquoi.
Okay. Whatever.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's total luxury. You just go back 25, 30 years, 20 years, 15 years, and it wasn't existent. 15 years ago it was. Didn't exist. So it's a luxury. It's a new thing. Now, yeah, it's a luxury.
Okay, wait. So follow up. Some people in certain areas will say to me that, but if we don't play spring hockey, our coaches for our club team or our AAA team or whatever use it as a kind of tryout for the team. So in that sense, we kind of have to go on the tournaments or we have to do whatever. So what's your rebuttal to that?
You don't have to do shit.
Yeah.
You don't have to do shit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Sorry. Sorry to upset. Here's what it is. Spring hockey is, this has always been my stance on it. If you want to play, if the kid wants to play spring hockey, you can afford it. You are not consciously trying to make the best, everything you do to make the best decisions to be like strictly hockey, long term and all that kind of stuff, then it doesn't matter. Like it doesn't matter if,
how do I say this?
It doesn't matter if you play it or not. Okay. I'll start with that. So that makes it a luxury. If you play it and you're thinking like, this is the thing we always say, like, what is your intention of spring hockey? And I love the fact that, and I've said this a bunch of times, I love the fact that some kids, and I think someone wrote a comment like that, that they got something out of it because of a certain situation. I go, yeah, that's what we said. If you didn't get a lot of ice, you had a bad experience with your team, you had you need more, you got injured, you want to play a different position, you like whatever the reasons, like from a strictly a hockey standpoint, cool. That actually makes sense, right? If you do it because you think you have to, which a lot of people do, and I, God bless you, and the horse you rode in on, man, it's whatever. If you think that's good for your kid, it's cool, whatever. I'm not saying don't do anything. It is a luxury though. You can play other sports and all that kind of stuff. But the intention of what I see a lot of people do, it's connections. I get to know this person, get to see where I stack up in my age group. It's like at 11, doesn't matter. It's and the other thing with it is what it is. It's a moneymaker. Sorry. It's people make a lot of money doing it. That's fine. It's good. But if you feel like this is what you need to do, then God bless you. But I had a really good conversation with a consult the other day from out of the country, and he was he was explaining his kid and the work ethic, and he goes, he's just not there, and we're just at this tournament, wonderful guy, and really good athlete, by the way. He was showing me some of the stuff he did. I'm like, wow. And he actually understood. But he goes, like, as a dad, it's like, oh, I don't want to let him have miss opportunities. But I said, all the things that you're discussing with me, I said, does it not seem like he's playing a lot of hockey? And if these things keep coming up, so it was like work ethic, right? I said, now, if you took some away, you think he'd be a little bit hungrier to play and you get this amount of time frame to be a good player and show me that you want it or do all the little habits that we're asking you? So, and he goes, yeah, you're right. I go, I know. It's just true. So when you look at your kid, if spring hockey is you just want to go out and have extra ice, you're making up for maybe lost time, a bad year, trying a new position, like whatever, it's cool. But if you're looking at it like And for listen, I'm also saying this. Some guys have played it and they benefited from it. Like there are that it is that too. There are some guys. Again, they don't play other sports and stuff. But for me, it's a luxury all day. And
okay, wait, you didn't answer the question.
Oh,
if you have to, if you're the coach of your AAA team is presenting things like if you don't play on the spring team, yeah, you're not gonna make our team, or like it's like a tryout or whatever. It's an evaluation. That's the most difficult pushback to address, because it's like, okay, the coach is making you feel like you're hemmed into doing it.
Yeah.
So I want to glue you to answering this one.
Because
it's a hard spot that people feel like they're in that position, right?
Yeah, I know that. And I was getting to that.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, I just took the long way.
Sorry. No. As we do.
So, but this is the thing. It's like, if I'm going back to, okay, let's go down my list here. Dalton Prout. If his coach says, if you don't play spring hockey with me, you're not making the team. That's not true. Aaron Ekblad, not true. Zach Cassian, not true. Matt Pumple, not true. Matt Martin, well, he didn't play AAA at that point, so maybe that's true.
Yeah.
Ryan Wilson, not true. Kirby Reichel, Adam Henrique, Steve Ott, Mike Weber. You go down the list of players that I've trained. If their coach said, if you're not playing on the spring team, you don't make the team because this is the evaluation, they're making the team.
Yeah, because they're the best players.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't want to lump everybody in the same thing, but the bottom line is that it's your season. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't know if this is true or not, but I think there's a certain mandate or some type of a rule that, not a rule, but some sort of mandate that you coach your kid from, like the coaches on, let's say whatever area you are, this is your season, right? October to whatever it is, May. Then after that, it's like you get to do whatever you want. Like, so what if you're playing baseball or lacrosse and it's like, I can't. It's like you don't make the team. It doesn't make any sense. I understand where people come from because they feel like the coach has power over them. But I just have a hard time believing that if you're a good enough player, that's true. Which leads me to the next part of that is that if you're hanging on a thread that much to make that team, then,
maybe you're not good enough to make the team.
That's the point. It's like, maybe hockey's not your thing.
This is what it boils down to, right? Like, these are the people that are normally most affected by these kinds of issues are people that are borderline kids anyways, right? We've mentioned this before. It's like the bottom five or the last five cuts, let's say. Like, those are the kids that are in the range where maybe that affects you. But if the coach is presenting something like, oh, if you're not at this spring tournament, that's going to cost you $2,000, you're not making the AAA team next year. It's like, if your kid's one of the best kids, if he's a AAA player and he's been playing AAA or he's good enough to play AAA now, the coach wants the best players. At the end of the day, they can say whatever they want. At the end of the day, they want the best players because every coach is incentivized to have a team that wins. So if that's, unless they are a rare exception.
Exception. Then go play for the other team.
Yeah. Then go to a different team, man. Like, you just there go should to be somebody team. Hemming you in that much no, to not. Doing something that's like that, yeah. Right?
I will get a lot of pushback on that, but
yeah, but it's, whatever. Again, it's people can think what they want because they're in it, right? When you're in it, it's hard to be outside of it and see from the outside. Yeah. But like, we're coming from the outside. We see how these things go.
Well, so talking about earlier about being a dad and not being a dad. So this is one thing that I was never like, because my business is that, right? We train people, and I used to cringe and I used to talk coaches out of it. It's like, okay, we want to skate with you and the team has to skate with you and go to workouts all summer. It's like, no, don't make them do that. It's summertime. I don't want them in here as a team because, like, here's what happens. If we get, let's just say it does happen, you got 18 kids in here and six aren't here mentally. Because they're pissed off that they got to be there, or they're just here because they have to be. It's like, I don't want to train you anyways. But it's not good for you. Don't make people do things that, like, as a coach, that they off season anyways that they don't need to do. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, I was just talking to a GM for one of the junior teams here, and he was explaining like what he thinks their team should be doing next year. I'm like, if you do that, if you make the team do this extra skate or this extra skills, and this is for junior players, like this is for players that are high level, I'm like, they're going to want to kill you. Like, They're not going to be committed. They're not going to want to be there. You're going to get bad attitudes. They're going to think you're a goof, and it's going to be a pain in their ass. Is that a winning strategy with your team? It's not, right? So you shouldn't be making people do anything. Nobody wants to do things they don't want to do, you know?
I do understand the parents that have that underlying perception that the coach says we got to do this, and it's like, because with my kid, I was like, I'm always saying no. I'm always saying no, and it's like the coach wants this, and it's like, yeah, we got to go to something, right? We got to go to a workout or whatever. It's like he's doing his own. Why does he need to do this? But anyways, I understand that you can create, but it, as you said, it only applies to certain people. The best player on the team or the top guys that aren't going anywhere because they're just better, it's doesn't apply to them, or they shouldn't be as threatened. And it's not being a jerk. It's not saying, I'm not listening to what you have to say. It's just like, it doesn't make sense. So anyways, the spring hockey thing, like, yeah, listen, again, you do whatever you think is the right thing. It's a luxury, and it's not necessarily that important your development, except in certain cases.
Yeah. So I included it in here because that would be spring hockey. A lot of times falls under the category of like development and one of those extra things.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to beat it to death once again.
Yeah.
What about having a strength coach or off ice, paying for off ice training?
Luxury.
Okay.
Yeah, luxury. I mean, you know, my son and I were just talking about this on the way home yesterday. We got in the car after your workout with him and the guys, and I said, "Wow, imagine if we didn't have PowerTech in town." Goes, Dad, I couldn't imagine. We'd have to go and find a good trainer or look at a, you know, if I was if it were PowerTech, I'm not saying me and him, me and like whatever, having a facility like this and the quality of training that there is. I said, imagine. He goes, Dad, I couldn't. I said, aren't we lucky? Yeah, because if not, and it's good hockey players get through it. Just you learn as you go. You'll get fixed later. You know, there's the kid, one of the kids on Charlie's team lives in Holstein, Ontario. Where the fuck is that? Where is that? Right? He's got to, if he's going to go to a trainer of any sort, I think his dad said it's an hour and a half away. That's an issue. So what does he do? He's a farmer and he does farmer stuff and he works out and he gets it done. So it's like, it's inconvenient, but it's a luxury. So, you know, like, you figure it out though, but it's totally a luxury.
Yeah. I think, you know? I'm gonna disagree at the point of, I'm going to say like 16. I think once you're up to 16, that's where it starts to turn into like the benefits of having one. That's good. The benefits of having a good trainer for off ice is like, the difference between kids that have it and don't, to me, at that level, when they're 16 and up, is very noticeable. Now, up to 16, I totally agree, because even some of the kids that we have like in draft year or in the year before draft year or whatever, they're not that checked into it, you know? So it's beneficial to a degree, because if they have a good trainer, it's beneficial to a degree, because even with them not being fully engaged in the process of becoming a hockey player, they will get better just because the trainer is making them, more or less. But once you hit that 16-year-old year, and I'm sure you'd agree also, because we were kind of talking about younger than that anyways, but once you hit 16 and up, it's like the benefits that come from being able to move your body correctly and how that translates on the ice. I've just seen it with too many of our guys.
Like, I agree. I thought you said, is having a personal trainer fitness place like this a luxury or a necessity?
I think
it's still a luxury.
Well, it's still a luxury, but I think you should be looking to get one when you're like, about the line where it's like, if you don't have one, you should go get one, because now you're at the point where you need someone to help teach you things.
Yeah.
And there's only so much you can do on your own. So I
agree 100% that you have to if I didn't read a million books from, you know, 18 to 45, I wouldn't have a clue. And yeah. I still I'm okay.
Well, and that's what I think of with our guys. It's like, yeah. I did all the work for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you're the book.
Right? I did yeah. all the work. So yeah. now you can just come and yeah. learn,
yeah.
you know? And I think the benefit from 16 and up, if you want to pursue hockey and you're 16 years old or
that's
any,
your investment.
Yeah. You I think you need to invest in that. And like I had that conversation with one of our guys who he's Division I now, he plays NCAA, and he's never invested in any kind of off-ice thing. And it shows, man. It shows. So like I'm having a call with the trainer at his school today to talk about him on the ice and whatever. But it's like he started talk with me last summer and he had a different trainer that wasn't great. So it was very, very apparent that he's behind in many different areas because he wasn't getting quality work off the ice. So I think my the switch flips for me at 16 where it's like I think you necessarily have to get one. Like get someone that can help you, unless like your dad is a trainer or like you have, where like Charlie, for example, he could just come here, which is, that's obviously an exception to the rule. But outside of that, it's like you should be making, I think it's worth the investment to find someone that's good to help you at like 16.
Well, it's definitely, if you're going to do it, if you're serious about it and you want to make some serious progress, that is a huge investment. Mm-hmm. It's a great investment.
Yeah. So that's the only difference I would have
and
on
that. And it's like, it's a necessary investment. Even if you're like super skilled
at that point,
you know, yeah. like it's even like nutrition at that point, it's like, it's not a luxury to eat well. You have to,
right.
to perform. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Exactly. What about like an instructor, like a skills instructor on ice extra?
What age?
You can go through the age.
Yeah. When you're young, I'm going to go back to that thing. Like how much the younger you are, the more important it is that the kid is having fun and is in a good environment, enjoying the game and the process. And if he goes on the ice and just only wants to work his backward skating that day, then God bless him. Good. He's focused on it and doing it. If he works just his shot, it's all good stuff. It's important for kids, especially the younger they are, to just go and play and experiment with the game. As you get a little bit older, the instruction on the ice can be beneficial, can be. Like we're talking like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 can be, but it also could be nothing because is the instructor teaching anything? Are they finding any deficiencies with you? Is it a generic program? Is it, you know, there's a lot of things that make it a good program. Sometimes going to a guy once a week is fine, but it's a luxury, 100%. Once you get to, I think once you get to like close to your, you know, the puberty ages and you're playing like Bantam or youth 14 and up, I think it becomes a little bit more important to do if you're trying to get specifics out of the thing, providing you want that. Cause a lot of kids, you know, the parents send them to things. It's like, no, I don't want it. We had a kid last year who plays junior, not in the OHL. We played junior and we were doing, basically a lot of small area stuff. They're called, I learned this from the Saginaw coach, Rondo games, right? So one of the guys on the team gave us a couple, said, oh, this is great. Made you think and stuff. And he just stepped out and goes, I don't want to do that. Or, I just like to play. Yeah. It's like, so he's paying for to not want to do it. It's like, and he was half-assing it. So like, was that a good session for him? Absolutely not. Right? So it's like your mind has to be in to want it. So if you want it, you need a good instructor now.
That's the other caveat I was going to say. That's providing,
yeah.
whether it's the strength coach or the skills instructor, providing yeah. they're a good instructor. Otherwise,
yeah.
it's not
yeah. necessary. So you could do a shooting drill, for example, with skate, whatever you want to do in it. And if you put a guy through the paces on a whatever drill, and if you don't make a correction or if you can't pick something out once in a while and say, okay, this is where your default is or your deficiency is, if you do this, it'll be better. Or, you know, finding something that he does wrong. Well, he bobbles a puck every now and then. It's like, why? Why? Why are you bobbling? There's reasons. That's where it's important.
Yeah. I think it's funny because I watch, there's so many skills coaches and whatever that they post social media stuff. So naturally it pops up on our page every now and then. And I watch the drills. And to give the disclaimer, some of the stuff that I post for, like, for example, the workouts, sometimes in the video, I know that the kids aren't, they don't have perfect form with what they're doing because they're kids and they're trying to figure it out. So with that caveat, but a lot, I know a lot of coaches, they only post their best, like they'll only post their best clips, whatever. So I know that a lot of times it's like they're only posting like the best guy or who they think is doing it great. And a lot of times with these skills coaches, it's like they're not even doing the drill right. It's like how they're handling the puck or how they finish with their shot or how they come out of the corner or whatever. It's like they're not even doing it right, you know? And so when you're going and paying this guy for what they're doing, and it's just like you're not even getting the, or it doesn't appear like you're getting the teaching points or the instruction that you need, right? And you can only tell so much from a clip. So
fair, and parents still. Parents, when you're looking at if you're paying someone, I think it's very, very important to be able to ask your skills coach questions, be able to point, you should very quickly be able to see, is this guy intense guy trying to put on a show or and appearing like he knows something, or is he actually teaching? Is there actually quality and substance to what he's teaching? When you do a drill, does it start with here's the skill drill we're doing, do it, or is it here's what we're doing and why, and here's how it applies to a game, and this is what I want you to focus on while you're doing it? That's a big difference.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 100%. Do you got any others? Because
anyone can run a drill.
Yeah. Take a
go to YouTube.
Yeah. Seriously. Do you got any other ones for like necessary versus luxury? Spring hockey strength coach, skills instructor. Those are the three.
No.
Any others?
No, fine. I don't think so.
So maybe we can just do a quick little summary of let's go by age. Let's say we've done this before, so it doesn't have to take too long. But kind of what you're looking for in terms of your skill development and let's say off ice training by age.
Okay, so let's go not zero because they're not born yet, but let's go like 4, 5, 6. Obviously, those guys go play, go have fun. The next, as you're getting up there, is obviously the fun, just any kind of skill drill, small area games, competition drills, anything like that. That's where you see like it's beneficial to have a lot of cones. It's a lot of beneficial to have a lot of tight turns, a lot of maybe where they're not thinking so much. Adding passes, getting them used to, you know, collecting passes and giving passes. But one thing, and it's not going to sound too great, is teaching a kid at an early age to have their head up. And everyone's going to say, wow, you're a genius, Andy. It's like, no, but it's like, it's huge. So if the more that you can teach a kid to have his head up, head on a swivel, before he's collecting pucks, so like everywhere on the ice, his head is up as much as he can, and handling pucks that come off, you know, maybe harder than, like a harder pass than necessary, and keeping your head up, it's critical. And then not only having your head up, because your head up could be up like this, and if you have tunnel vision, the blinders are on, then you're not seeing. So when I ask the kids, and I do it with my junior guys, why do I want your head up? Why do I want your eyes out? And you know, the common answer is so you don't get hit. And that's very true. But there's more to it than that. So what happens is, like, you can, like I always say this with Aaron Ekblad, right? And Kyle Wellwood was like this. It's like they had a panic threshold that it seemed like where most guys will give up a puck. They are calm, cool as a cucumber, and they make a play. Why? Well, part of that is because they're mentally can process what's going on. So if you, so like, let's say I'm a D, I'm Aaron Ekblad, right? And if I catch a pass and I look down for that split second and then I look up to make a play, that split second in NHL time or junior time, whatever level you're playing, gives someone that split second to get to you, which now, as you're looking up and decide what you want to do, now it's panic mode. So if you can learn to have that head up, right? And so collecting a pass with your head up more or less, and you look down just for a second, but when the puck's on your stick, you're already looking up, all of a sudden you've created a lot of time. And time at any level is one of your most precious commodities when it comes to hockey player, because if you have time, then you can do what? You can make decisions. You can make plays. You can see things. So by having your head up, you're already scanning the ice and you see, oh, that guy fell. That option's gone. Like, it happens like that, right? So, and then on the other side, so you can make plays. You got time to make plays. You see what's out there and you can protect yourself a little bit better. Because if, how does the same kid get, you know, let's say a rim off the wall. How does the same kid get, if a D pinches or someone's coming at them to hit, how could the same kid get that over and over and over again, get hit every single time? Or 50% of the time. You shouldn't. You actually shouldn't. You should be able to process that before it happens. So learning to keep your head up and doing drills with your head up and looking around or eye scanning the ice.
What's the age group here? Where are we? What's
right
the range?
From day one, right okay. out of the chute, okay. in diapers. Keep your head up and teach that skill.
Okay, so then then you were saying the cone stuff, doing things with passes.
Yeah.
What is that age range? Like eight? What are we, eight
well,
to
that,
10?
I would keep that in that.
Right up to
yeah, because
what?
You can't go, well,
like put
it's
a number
good,
on it.
Good forever. It's okay. good forever, but then that diminishes a little bit as you get older.
Okay.
That's a seesaw, right?
So then where's the, what's the transition line?
So then once you get into, I would say like once you get into like a triple A Adam Peewee, then I think your skill sessions are skill sessions. Your focus is on passing, shooting, like the skill works there, but like.
So more like isolated raw skill?
A little more isolated raw skill, like breaking down some of the skill here and there, keeping it still fun and intense because there's only so much you can do. But now you're like teaching shots, right? Like, so for example, So like now when a kid's shooting, now they've done, you know, 2-3 years of playing hockey and, you know, everyone tried lifting the puck. Now everyone can start to shoot. Now you maybe teach one or two different shots that are mm-hmm. important. Teach them how to pass properly without leaving, you know, telegraphing passes and stuff like that. So okay. that's where.
So that would go to, let's say, like U12?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or so?
Yeah.
So now we get into the U13, 14, 15,
yeah.
16.
Now I think your skill needs to look a lot more like a game.
Like how
I mean,
we
listen
back to like applying this
yeah.
to the game.
So like there's always time to do high end stick handling drills and skating drills. It's all good. It's never going to get old. Small area games, all that kind of stuff. It's good, but now it's like learning how to get into open ice, how to pick pucks off the wall, how to retrieve pucks, how to do game like situations become more and more is what your skill should look like, right? Because again, you could take at 14, that's why you see a lot of kids get drafted and they look, or they're in their draft year and they were great hockey players that could skate through people all of a sudden, but then the game changes. Now, why? That's what I'm saying. It's like, okay, if you go into your offensive zone and every time you're going in there, even though you're the fastest guy on the ice, let's say, and maybe you're getting the D pinches you or you end up in the corner, why is that happening? Now, you understand that now you're sitting there going, okay, you're fast, you can stick handle, you can do things, but you're always in a bad situation. Why? Well, maybe because you're not entering in the right way. Maybe, right? So maybe we try this, right? Maybe you've got a great shot and you're sitting there and you think you're open and, you know, it's learning, it's learning to slow things down, right? Like maybe you're going to the net hard every single time, but you're playing with a guy that is slower making movements. So maybe you got to adjust, okay, I got to slow down or I got to find space. So it's like teaching a little bit more of the game to think the game now to make your skill appropriate, yep. if that makes sense. It's protecting pucks off the wall, retrievals, and collecting hard passes, because that's the other thing about keeping your head up. So especially at this level now, as you're getting before your draft year and beyond, like draft year here in Canada, we'll talk 16 years old. I think it's really important to be able to have be able to collect passes from any area, like, and hard passes or, you know, knuckleballs and stuff. I think it's really important, and to learn not to miscue pucks or bobble pucks or whatever, because that's what leads into bad plays.
Yeah, and you can turn, that's, I really like that quality too. You can turn things that seem like nothing into an opportunity. That's a really good skill, because you can catch a bad pass or because you don't bobble it when a lot of guys would have or whatever.
So the question is if you, when you get to the 13, so this is where skill development is really tricky. And this is where parents, this is what I'm saying. It's not critical that you have a trainer or a skills coach, because at the young ages, right, let's say right up to 11 years old, 12 even, let's say something like that, you haven't hit puberty. Anything you do is almost going to be fine, but anyone teaching it can teach it, because like really and truly Charlie's uncle, who never really played hockey, if I said, hey, set up all these drills and whatever, watch a couple of my videos and just do that, he could do that and he wouldn't have a clue. And then he could sit there as a cheerleader, say, good job, work hard, keep going, guys, and all those non-coaching cues. And the kids would say, well, that was a pretty good session, man. It was intense. But it was good for them. It was fine. They handled the puck, and they were off balance and all that kind of stuff. And they're building some sort of skill. But once you get to that 12, 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old, and you want someone to work with your kid, that's not appropriate anymore. It's only appropriate just to get warmed up or to do some reps and let them know that. Executing those skills into a game-like situation is more important. And now to find a skills coach that can actually do that and break things down, oh, that happened because of this, whatever, that becomes very, very hard to find.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I'm going to go to the off-ice stuff real quick because this is easy. I think, and you can disagree if you disagree, up until about 13, 14, play sports and move your body athletically. So do a bunch of different things that are athletic in a play-based environment to understand some body awareness. That's really all that you need. You don't need to be doing structured, specific workouts up until that point. You can if you want to, and it should just be basic movement patterns if you're going to do that. That doesn't mean you can't touch weights either. Like, you can do some weights. It's okay, providing that you're being taught how to lift properly and do things the right way. But you don't need to have all kinds of structure. And the reason that that is how it is because you can't really make gains in speed, strength, power, without having hit puberty, because you don't really have the hormones yet. That doesn't mean you can't learn some body mechanics. You can, but the gains you're going to make are going to be marginal relative to after you hit puberty. So,
in fact, if a kid that does that and doesn't see them getting stronger, like if they say, oh, my kid grew up here, he wanted to deadlift like the guys, and he was a little guy, and it was fine. We'd put a couple pounds on there and he would do it and kind of tweak, right? And say, oh, try this. And he got used to good posture. But then he would get pissed off because, like, he'd look in the mirror and he was like, I'm not jacked.
Yeah, I'm not
jacked. You're a little kid. No, you're not going to get jacked, right? Or he's not exactly. Getting stronger. So you get frustrated. It's like, eh.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. So once you hit that, your kid starts hitting puberty. You really don't need off ice training stuff until then. And now people get, because I get this all the time from people with younger kids that they want to get them on a training program. Some kind of training program, or come work out in here with me off ice, do footwork drills and whatever. And it's just like, you don't have to pay for it, man. Like, you don't need to
play pickleball.
Go on YouTube and just copy things that people are doing for exercises, because to your point, it's the reps. It doesn't really matter. It's the same as on the ice, right? And sorry, go.
What I do like though is if a kid sees like the ladders or the little hurdles, mm-hmm. or for example, I'm not saying that's the answer. When a kid says, hey, dad, can I get a ladder or hurdles because I want to work my quick
feet?
That's
exactly where I was going.
Okay.
That's exactly
throw it out there. You see the kid every day believing in his head that he's doing something to make himself better, actually is.
Right.
To a certain degree. Mm-hmm. But he's put himself in a situation where I want to get better. I believe that this is going to make me faster. And maybe by the placebo effect, he jumps on the ice and he is. Or maybe it actually works.
Yeah.
But the point is, he's doing it because he thinks, yeah, this is my advantage.
And that was going to be my one caveat to all that, is if the kid wants some structure because they want to feel like I'm going to work out for 1 hour today, then that's great. Like, you can put together a workout for an hour. But it's the forcing kids to follow a workout program that don't want to. Just let them play sports or mess around with some weights or mess around with, obviously, making sure that it's safe and they're doing things properly. But just let them mess around with athletic movements unless they want that. If they want to do an actual workout, then, and it doesn't have to be anything crazy. Like, oh, you want to do legs today, kid? Okay, I'm going to go on YouTube and find 4 leg exercises and you're going to do those today.
Yeah.
And
see if you stick to it.
Yeah, and it's fine, right? Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. So that's the only caveat. After you're like 14, 13, 14, puberty, whenever that happens for your kid, because some are earlier, some are later, then you can start to think about getting into a gym. And it's still, even with a trainer, it shouldn't be you're jumping into the CrossFit games. It's like you're jumping in to learn how to deadlift, how to squat, how to push things, pull things, how to carry things, and get yourself, again, it's the body awareness under load now. Once you hit, and that's going to take a few years to develop. So up until, like, with our guys that are now 16, they're just starting to transition because they've been working out now for 2 years, they're just starting to transition into like hockey specific off-ice training and conditioning. So up until you're 14, like you are up until puberty, we'll say, you don't need anything specifically structured other than things that are fun or things you want to do. And you can try any different training modalities good. Once you're 14, 13, whatever that puberty age is, up until you've taken a few years to lay the foundation of basic movement patterns, that is when the transition happens after that. 16, 17, that's where we start to get into like hockey specific now. Because until you have the base, it's just like anything else. We don't get specific until you have the base. Until the foundation is there of everything, we're not going to start to specialize yet. So that's kind of how I would lay out the off-ice kind of stuff.
Yeah. One thing, I was thinking about this. This is the dad talking to me. To you, it's really interesting. Like, there's so many little subtle ways to keep your kids engaged when they're doing this stuff. So, like, I'm just thinking, you know, outside of hockey, son loved to shoot baskets, right? Or play catch, right? So, let's just go with baskets and we'd fire and I'd just throw out, bet you couldn't do 10 in a row. Let's have a competition. Kid loves to beat dad, yep. Right? Or we play catch and we're going, okay, it has to hit the glove every time. So now it's a challenge. It's like, now it's fun for them. So now if you say, let's say the kid got, you bought him a ladder or you put the ladder on the driveway and he was showing you drills and he's, you know, just don't tell him he's doing it wrong or right or whatever. Just say, so what, like, just little things, eh? Like, wow, the feet are coming, eh? Or let me try this. And then he'll probably laugh at you unless you're like super athlete. Or if you are, maybe you want to be like you. How you do that, dad? But it gets them engaged. You're like doing it with them. Don't make it a chore, but like when it's out, just maybe you could do something like, let me time you on that. Like it took you 8 seconds that time, you know, and then they get a lot more engaged that way.
Yes. So that's a good point. So let me clarify, because when I say that you don't need to have structure, what I'm saying is you don't need to be following like a workout program, but it's good to have structure within the activity. And that's what gamifying does, right? So if you gamify something and you say, okay, you do 10 of these, or let's go through the ladder on 1 foot 10 times, or let's go, when you put some structure in that sense to what you're doing, it's a lot easier for kids to be engaged. So that's an important distinction that I didn't say. So it's no, I'm saying you don't need structure in terms of following a specific progression or a specific plan to get better over time. You don't have to do that. But what's a really good idea is adding structure within the activity that you're doing to maybe gamify it or add a challenge to it or whatever. Like even if you're playing basketball, it's like a loser has to do 20 push-ups or whatever. You add a little gamification to it and now there's some structure layered within that activity and that makes it a lot more engaging on the kid's side. So that's an important point.
Well, I'm sure you would agree with this. One of the best examples that I can think of a kid who did it, like learned on his own and it benefited him hugely, both on ice and off the ice, was Dalton Prout. So he said that, you know, like I knew him as a kid, but only when he came on the ice and stuff and to say hi and a little bit. But when you talk to him and he just said, yeah, I'd come home from school and I'd go grab my net, drag it behind in the field and I shoot pucks. People thought I was nuts. I shoot pucks, just shoot pucks, run inside, have a pizza pot. And then I would do stuff that I thought would make me better. So he said, I would do jumping drills. And I'd, hey, dad, can you build me this? Because he was pretty handy. And his dad would build him stuff and he would do it on his own. And his process, and this is, I think, an important aspect of what we're talking about, is doing it on his own. He asked himself questions and he felt things. He goes, like, how come it feels weird here? How come it feels like, and he would have to kind of figure things out. Did that with shooting, did that with skating. So he went through his whole NHL career. And if it didn't feel right to him or didn't make sense to him because he did that process as a kid, going all the way through junior to the NHL, if he didn't do that to himself or for himself, then he would just be a guy that just does drills. So he's a very, very, very intelligent on this stuff. Can't fool him. Ask crazy questions because he knows like stuff like how important his big toe is when pushing off and using that for power. How many guys do you talk to talk about their big toe? Their shin angles. That's Dalton Prout. And that's not because someone told him day in and day out. It's because he would do things, analyze himself, and, oh, that feels right, and I feel like it's more powerful.
Yeah, this speaks to...
It's huge, man.
Yeah, it speaks to the intention thing, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, well, I didn't make the NHL, but I did the same thing. Everything I've learned ever has just been from me doing that exact process, right? That exact process has just been, like, read a book, try to apply it, ask a question, ask more questions, try something different. Oh, that, I didn't realize that makes sense because I learned that from this source, and now I'm going to ask more questions. And so now I do that same exact thing when I'm looking at other guys train or the kids train, and when the kids ask me questions... Just because I can do the analysis, I can come up with things that seem to make sense to me based on what I'm looking at, right? And you would never have that unless you were somebody who asked the questions and developed that analytical mind. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of these top athletes, especially in, I shouldn't say especially in hockey, but I notice it a lot in hockey just because I'm in hockey. I was talking to my brother the other day about how the stereotypes of hockey players are kind of like they're dumb. And I was saying to him, like, it depends what we're talking about in terms of dumb. Because most of the high-end players that I've trained now, they're not, like, really good at math. But when we're talking about training and their body and what system they need to be using to develop, that's where you see the brain. That's where the brain comes out.
What's important,
right?
To them.
So, exactly, because it's something they're interested in and that's important. And so on the one hand, you can see, you know, some of these guys where it's like they come off as like a dummy because they're not, they have like, you know, jock mentality and they talk with the slang words and maybe they wouldn't belong in a university classroom. That's fine. But it's similar to people that are like in trades, you know, because they weren't Ivy League educated. That doesn't mean they're not smart. It's just they know how to apply things in a different way or they speak different than you. But that's where I really see it come out with guys like that, the high-end athletes. If I sat and talked to them about Shakespeare, they'd be falling asleep. But as soon as we start to talk about training, it's like all of a sudden you found a scientist, you know? And I noticed that with the top-end guys that I train with. Like, and we could name, you and I, if we made a list right now of who the names are, we'd make the same list because it's the guys that are asking the questions and are engaged that you can tell these are guys that want to succeed and develop to be high-end athletes. So it's just an interesting point from what you're talking about. That analytical mind is really, it's a cool thing to see.
Well, you take that training that Dalton did, like I was saying, off the ice, and you do apply that when you're shooting pucks. Those are the kids that get the most out of their training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they know what's right.
So I want to go to just briefly to kind of touch on making a plan, kind of how to make a plan for yourself. So I want you to talk about this more from the parent perspective, not the player side. So I don't need to talk about specifically what the plan is, but the two big things for parents, because most people, they have families and they have a job and they have life, is the budgeting for things and time considerations for things. So a lot of parents, they talk about having to run around all the time, bringing their kid to this and making rides for that, and they got to pay for this, and there's this tournament and whatever. So maybe it doesn't even have to be a specific plan, basically, but maybe just kind of a philosophy from the parent side of budgeting and managing your time to make it work for within a family structure. Does that make sense? Kind of.
Well, it does, but it's like that's a really tough one because people's work lives and everyone's a little bit different. And then if you have one kid as opposed to four, that's a lot different.
Well, so as far as
time goes, you will not have any.
Yeah. Maybe talk about your specific situation then, and then hopefully people can extrapolate. So like, what did you do? Cause you had three kids, but let's say with Charlie, how did from youth and then developing up to, let's say, his draft year, how did your time, your budget and your time management maybe like start off and then evolve? So like how much extra stuff was he doing? Like how often were you driving around? Like what did you feel was necessary for him to do or pay for in terms of extra stuff? And then maybe how did that change over time?
When he was young playing hockey, I just let him play hockey. He would come to my gym all the time. He hung out with dad, right? And then he would jump on the ice with, I remember he was probably 8 years old. 7 years old, 8 years old, 9 years old. Yeah. And, you know, he would go out with the NHLers, not because he was training. He thought he was, but he loved this stuff, right? But this is where I work. So it was like, that's where I feel like I'm a little different. But he would jump on the ice and I'd tell the guys, they would ask, let him come out. I go, no. Oh, no. They could just let him come out, do some drills here and there. And there was no teaching, and which was good for him. But I know a lot of people would say, well, yeah, he had that advantage. Well, not really. He was just playing. That's all it was. He was playing and skating with some pretty cool guys. He really is the one that got serious about it, not me. So he just, I think when he was in probably Bantam is when he wanted to be on the ice all the time, right? And because of my lifestyle, he was able to go on every, you know, as much as he wanted, really. And it was not that serious. But so if I was to take it, I didn't have this. I would say by probably 14 or 13, I would have started bringing him to places. Before that, I wouldn't have. Because here's the thing. He had outdoor rinks all the time. So and this is a beautiful thing now that I'm there. There was the COVID year was awesome in a way because up until that, in the winter times, I would have skates for his age and he would say, well, I'm just going to go out to this pond. And it's like, cool. Like I was like, cool. And he got probably more out of that than he would have with me or with our group. So, but anyways, at probably that 14 year old age, when I saw that he was like very, very committed to wanting to do more, that's when I would
have extra investment. Yeah.
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 With a good coach or maybe some fitness, but not even 14 for fitness, but probably 15 the year before his draft. I could verify that now. And then as he was getting more serious, then I would have him with a trainer at, you know, 14, 15.
So I think from that kind of goes into when it is time or when you are going to start to make extra investments, then let's talk about evaluating instructors, which we've done this in depth before. So again, it doesn't have to be super, super detailed, but my three questions would kind of be, generally what you're looking for and then maybe some like red flags. So generally, what would you look for in a skills coach or a strength coach? And then maybe some red flags that you see would watch out for.
Honestly, for a skills coach, I would have a hard time if he didn't play hockey at a high level. Like a high level. I would have a hard time if the trainer played almost a high level.
What's a high level?
I would say NCAA. I would say OHL and above. And the reason I say that is because that's when it becomes a whole different game. Like it's a whole different game. A whole different game to actually break things down. Now, you may have someone that is a really good analytics guy that can break some things down, but there's certain details that I truly believe if you haven't played, you can't be a very, very good skills coach for the higher end anyways. At the other end, it's not so important. Younger ages, it's not so important. So what am I looking for? So that'd be one, is that you have played.
And would you say same for like a strength coach or like you want someone that was in hockey?
No, not strength coach. I think you can get, no, I wouldn't say you have to have a strength coach that was in hockey because there's a lot of components to hockey that, you know, strength training that you don't need to be a hockey player, like an NHL or a top end hockey player, but you have to really understand the body. And I think it's a benefit. I do think there's a benefit to someone having played at least some hockey as a strength coach to understand what it's like to
what
be
what it feels like.
To feel what it's like to dig into the ice or to getting leaned on or to be in like just out of breath so hard, but you got to go back out and stuff like that. So, and then as an instructor, the next thing I would say, or maybe it's not the next thing, maybe it's the first thing, but I want someone that engages with the kids well at the appropriate age. So when you're young, that's where it's kind of, you can get away with someone that's not incredibly knowledgeable that could just slap together a plan. Yeah. Want it to be a good environment. But the most important thing, if I'm paying for it, would be what I said it before is like, what am I getting from you that I can't get from someone else? And that would be correction, like the why we're doing something. So let me go back. If they're doing something wrong, there's a correction that is being taught. And then, or before that is why you're doing something and how you're going to do it and being able to extrapolate the things that you need to extrapolate that from, because otherwise you're just doing ice and you can do that with yourself. Yeah. Just get ice.
So maybe we'll wrap up on red flags, a couple red flags.
Yeah. Loud mouths.
Loud mouth.
Well, no, I like, there's a lot of pretend, like, and I don't, I don't mean to say this, and but there's a lot of people that are just going out there, and I've seen people that go to YouTube and they get their drills from there, and you're paying for that. And I've seen it, no teaching. I've seen guys very, very uninterested except for just putting the cash in their pocket. So, and they talk a big game, or they, you know, they maybe they can do the drills, but they don't know how to teach. Like those are the little things. Like those are red flags to me. And I think that if you, I think it's very, I think you'll know very quickly if they don't have the teaching ability, or if they aren't able to pick out a couple of things and teach everyone as a group, or break down individuals and spend time, even just touching on things. I think that's a waste of time. I think that's a red flag. They got to be able to teach something.
Cool. That's everything I wanted to talk about. So I think we can stop there, and okay. I kind of have to stop anyways.
Okay.
Do you have any closing remarks on the skill development stuff?
Or? Yeah. Here's the thing. The closing remarks is this. You're going to do, like, mom and dad, you're going to do what you want. Yeah, there's going to be times where you feel like you're going to have to, or you're going to be left behind. I promise you, you won't. Your kid will decide how badly he wants to develop as a hockey player. If you can provide, you know, if they're very interested, and you can provide a little bit here and there, that's beneficial. But I think it's important to understand that it doesn't have to cost you time and money every single week to make your kid a better hockey player. All the stuff that goes around the development, a lot of it is fluff. A lot of it, as you said earlier, is luxury. And there's a common sense approach to it. And sometimes being a parent, it's hard to have common sense because you're emotional about things, and you want to make sure you want the best for your kid. The bottom line is that if you are going to, there's reasons, different reasons to invest in the game. Some of it's to keep your kid in the, to teach him how to work and to teach him how to get up, and I get all that kind of stuff. But there's very few kids that are going to actually get to a certain level in hockey, and investing a ton of money where you think a kid, where your kid is a above and beyond a lot of the kids at 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 is, to me, not the best investment, because you just don't know. It's after that when life gets real, a little more real, I guess, where there's girls, there's all the distractions and other things that they can be interested in, puberty, all these different things. That's where you're going to see and understanding the game, getting intelligent about the game. That's where you're going to see if they actually want to be hockey players. You know, I, you know, sad, I'll finish it with this. And this is why I say this all the time about you never know when your kid's going to be a hockey player. So I know a couple kids that have been drafted, have played in the OHL, and a girl has got them literally to quit the game, or some other distraction got them out of the game. And if you look back at the moms and dads that have, you know, you think your kid's a hockey player. Oh, wow, he's signed. This is, oh man, he's on his way to the NHL. And one thing pulled him out of there. And like, to me, was there warning signs before? Was he mentally stable? Was he, and I'm not saying he wasn't or wasn't, but there's a lot of things that can distract a kid from being a good player. So as a parent, if that kid is not fully invested doing it himself, for the most part, you know what I mean by that? Shooting his pucks, doing his things, just all into it. And the girls aren't distracted. All these things aren't distracted too much. Then I don't know why you would invest a whole bunch of time and money, because things can change in an instant. And I've seen it firsthand several times. So it's like, how does mom and dad feel now? Like, do you think mom and dad, after taking the time and thinking that they got someone special, like, on their hands? Because everyone does to a certain degree. Now the kid quits for a girl? What? Like, you think they're sitting there going, oh, I'm glad we did that. Right? So that's like, and then seeing other kids that didn't do any type of training that make it, right?
Yeah, take off, exactly. Yeah.
So
exactly.
That's all I have for it.
Yeah, cool. I think for me, it's just the wrap up is just, when it comes to the extra training and extra stuff, it's just do what is reasonable for exactly the reason that you just laid out. It's, we got people that have done everything and they quit, and then you got kids that barely do anything and they end up and the guys that make it, right? So do things that work for you with your budget, with the time you have, and don't drive yourself nuts about the small details of this stuff, particularly when you're young, because it really doesn't matter too much.
No, so, it blows my mind, is I've seen kids in junior that they have an actual shot to move on and make money. And their training, because they're now 19, 18, whatever, their training isn't as important as mom and dad would like them to like it to be, where they would rather golf than go, I'll take a day off, take a day off. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. The guys that are really serious about it are going to do what they need to do.
Yeah, for sure. So next week's going to be our last one. We're talking about parent communication. So that's going to be you with your kid. So that's going to be a good one. Yeah, that's going to be a good one to finish up on. And that'll be the end of the series. So we got one more for any of the members. If you guys have questions, refer to email and send them in to me. I'll send another one out to you guys next week. So we'll see you guys for next week. Bye.